This episode of Moon Tower Business is brought to you by your local State Farm agent, Alejandra de la Torre. Alejandra's team has amazing customer service, knowledgeable staff, and super competitive pricing. They also have a very convenient location in Round Rock, located at 2200 North A.W. Grimes Boulevard, Suite 500. Alejandra's team is bilingual, and they have over 52 years of combined experience in the insurance industry. Alejandra's team is very friendly and helpful, and they always go the extra mile. They even have after-hours emergency availability. So please call Alejandra's State Farm team for all of your insurance needs, whether it's auto, home, life, or business. Their telephone number is 512-244-3311, or you can see their website at www.alexdelatorre.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Moon Tower Business Podcast. This is your host, Joseph Obel. And today I'm speaking to Moses Harris, who is the co-founder and executive director of Tech Can Do Better. Moses, welcome.
Hi, how are you? Happy to be here.
Good, good. Thanks for being here. Moses, before we kick off and talk about Tech Can Do Better, maybe you can kind of introduce yourself to listeners and tell listeners a little bit about what you've been involved in before.
So my name is Moses Harris. I'm originally from Chicago. I'm a software engineer by trade. I've been in the software industry for over 20 years now. Jeez, over 20 years. And I've worked in apparel, namely e-commerce. I've worked in the insurance industry. I've worked in the tech industry at large, small, large. I've been in an ad agency where it was myself and one other person who was my boss. And then I've also worked for enterprise level, large companies with hundreds of thousands of employees. I've really run the gamut where, you know, I have a good feeling for how to exist, survive, and thrive inside of different types of companies, tech-oriented organizations, and businesses at large. And, you know, what have I done before? Wow. This is the kind of thing where you go, you take your life and you have to kind of summarize it in a couple short sentences. So, my degree is a bachelor's of science in architectural studies from U of I in Chicago. And, immediately after school, I went into the music business because you got to follow your dreams for a second. I did that for about 6 years, but I had always been into STEM. I had coded as a hobby, and I realized that the one thing that was always existing in my life was programming, right? Even when I was broke, I needed to make some cash on the side. I'd be building websites for people or, you know, playing around with, you know, JavaScript or code in the background. And that was the thing that just survived, right? When I just kept moving on, the pay was better. I'll tell you, starving artist was not a good fit for me. And, you know, that brings me to today. You know, I've seen a lot of success in a lot of different types of businesses, and I hope that continues into the future.
That's great. And so you're currently at IBM?
Yes. Yes. I'm a site architect / development lead, and the consulting side of IBM is global business services. I'm in a department called GBS Design, where we take good design practice and convert it to business outcomes, right? So we want to be user focused, people focused, figure out what's best for the people at the end of the chain, not necessarily what's good for the business, because what's good for the client is usually what's best for the business. So convincing businesses that that's the case is a whole different story, but yeah, that's pretty much what we do.
Gotcha. So you're the co-founder and executive director of Tech Can Do Better, which I believe is based here in Austin. Is that right?
Yes, very much so. It's born and raised here in Austin. It's a young, nascent organization, but we've seen some pretty good growth and some pretty good progress in the last year and a half that we've been in existence.
Excellent. So maybe tell listeners kind of what inspired you to launch Tech Can Do Better, and then just summarize, what the organization's all about.
So yeah, no problem. So Tech Can Do Better was the brainchild of Lawrence Humphrey, which is our main founder. He's also a coworker at IBM, and we had done quite a bit of diversity work in the design studio at IBM, and around hiring, around pay equity, around just representation, and figuring out what the design studio may not have been doing right and what we could do better as far as getting a wider amount of designers. We're talking about not just race, but we're talking about gender, we're talking about different levels of mental representation as far as different levels of maybe people who may have been on the spectrum or have different levels of mental illness or just things like that. So basically, just looking around and seeing what you want the business that you're in to look like and figuring out how to get there. And so we realized that within the confines of a business, there's a lot of rules and there's a lot of honestly red tape that you run into that prevents you from really reaching the goals that you want to get to, because you always have to take the survival of the business and the success of the business into account. And so when Lawrence came to me and said, "Hey, look, I want to start an organization that does the same kind of work, but this is a systemic issue, right? This isn't just one company. And there's a lot of companies that are doing this, right? Especially after the death of George Floyd being one of the bigger latest ones, but there have been a number after him and so many before him that it seems a shame for so many of these different islands to be doing this work in silos and not be reproducing this work across the industry. Because while a large company like IBM has the drive and the budget to put time and effort towards some of this work, there's smaller companies with 50 people in it where they go, "Well, we have one guy, or we may have one black guy who's interested in this stuff. So we'll make him the DEI rep. And he's responsible for this now, but also on top of his other roles and responsibilities." And then how does that lead to growth when that company is saying, "Look, we're doing something," but as a singular individual, he's kind of alone in that he either has to do the research and come up with this plan, this goal on his own, or he has to look around and find out what the best practices are. But how does he know how those work in practice? How does he know what results those may have led to? How does he know what pitfalls he may run into along the way? So what Tech Can Do Better strives to do is to not only aggregate that information, bring the best practices into one place. We're talking about on different levels from associate level, junior level to middle manager, all the way up to the executive level, but also figure out what policy needs to be in place on the company and the governmental level to get to some of these changes that we're trying to get to, right? And we're talking about representation from Black people in tech. Honestly, like if it comes down to it, you look around and you see a picture in the tech industry that's different than what they say they represent. And we're trying to get the picture of every day that they're putting out into the media and that they're putting out into the world at large to match what's actually happening inside the walls. So, I mean, there's so much more. I'd love to talk about this stuff. So, that's a little bit about what we're striving to do. But we're also trying to do that through building a community of internal tech employees. And what we believe will happen is give us the insight that we need inside those walls, where a lot of people are yelling at the FAANG companies, like the Facebooks, the Amazons, the Microsofts, Googles, to say, Netflix, all these companies to say, "Hey, do better. where does the accountability come in, right? Where do the companies, what incentives do the companies have to listen to those voices other than avoiding bad press, right? So they put out a couple good press releases. People go, okay, they must be doing it. And then they move on. The accountability side, you need to have insight into what steps the company's taking. The diversity reports that the companies are putting out as far as what the outcomes and what progress has been made. And the only way we can get that is by engaging the companies internally and engaging the interested employees within those companies. So the community is also a large part of how we do the work that we do.
Gotcha. I mean, first of all, the work you all are doing here is great. This is amazing. It's for sure very well needed. And I thought it was interesting that you said, you know, it takes changing company policy and then also legislation, right? Governmental legislation in this space. So can you talk a little bit about kind of legislation that can help this mission?
So that can take a lot of shapes. So one of the things that tech industry has is an outsized influence, namely because of the amount of money and the amount of social capital that they hold. I mean, Facebook itself, even across the world, it's billions, but within the United States, it's a large proponent of the United States is on Facebook. So what this gives them is the ability to change minds. It gives them the ability to change the overall conversation around these things, right? Also, when you're looking at developments in the tech landscape, we're talking about facial recognition. We're talking about data, rules around data governance and privacy, where unintended outcomes of well-meaning solutions can lead to just bad times for, neighborhoods and underserved populations. So on the legislative side, you're looking at how do we prevent false narratives? How do we prevent faulty information from getting out into the space and worsening the position of people who are already oppressed? Honestly, like when you're looking at a specific example, let's say real estate loans in the United States, right? They're oftentimes Black people in the United States have a hard time getting loans, getting the confidence of banks and other industries to give them money in general. We're talking about VC capital. We're talking about, investment in general. We're talking about, mortgages. So that bias is internal, right? That bias is something that a lot of people are trying to work on, but it's something that's been built into the United States at large. And it's something that lives in the culture of the country. So for a mortgage broker to look at a Black person, see that they have a good possibility of getting a loan, there's still reasons that may be unknown, that may be known, that may give somebody a lower mortgage rate, that may give somebody a denial, that may not allow that to happen. So what we can do is say, if people are already kind of getting a hard time systemically across the country, and this is a sticky situation because you don't want to step on, free speech concerns, where even though tech isn't a governmental organization, there's still the opinion at large that you should have free speech in these open communities online. Rules and regulations around how that information is transferred, how it's used, and how it drives the overall conversation. So say a person is shot by the police. Is it helpful or harmful to put out a narrative around, this person as a criminal or this person as a ne'er-do-well, when the story is very much around everyone being mistreated, right? The police should not have the ability to extrajudiciously kill people outside of the court system, outside of the law. It's a wider problem, right? And any conversation that goes to investigating, you know, the background of the person that was killed and outside of the situation for why this person got shot doesn't drive that larger conversation. And so my personal opinion is that information changes minds. How that information is used and how that information is shared, especially for companies, social media, social networks that use that information to make money, they're just very much responsible for the truth and the validity of that information. So if they're going to be using it, they should be responsible for legislating the usage of it, making sure that our personal information isn't misused, making sure the technology like facial recognition works for everyone. Like, I don't know if you've heard the story where the creation of facial recognition happened kind of in a silo where there were no people of color on the team. And in releasing out into the world, it didn't work very well on people of color because it wasn't tested on people of color. And so when you run into situations like this, what are the rules that we can put in place that say, how do we just make sure we don't see these bad outcomes? Honestly, it's a much wider conversation. We want to work with people who write policy, people who are much better at the actual putting the pen to paper than myself. But I think that the conversation is one that needs to be had, and there are specialists and there are people who can make this happen. But our advocacy is more about doing the research, finding what's necessary, and talking to the people and hiring the people who can do that work.
Absolutely. And it sounds like this could be at the state, local, and federal level.
Honestly, we're really trying to do this in a chapter system where any one chapter is not responsible for the entire country, but the local is reflected on the national level, right? So I think that once you get a good case study of how you can influence a local system, you do that at the state level, you get a few different states, and that gives you a little bit of drive and a little bit of noise that you can make at the national level. So it's going to be difficult. No one said this is something that's going to happen quickly, but we're really putting together an energized community of people and an energized staff that is ready for this fight ahead.
Absolutely. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the data when it comes to diversity in the tech sector generally?
So it really matters about, you know, what we're looking at, what analytic aspects we're looking at. There's a few that I can talk about, namely hiring, representation, meaning like diversity, the existence of people of color inside of the tech industry. And we can talk about pay parity, and then we can talk about the hiring pipeline in general, as in, you know, where do the staff and the people who work in tech come from. I would say that my personal pet peeve usually comes in around referrals and hiring, making sure that, and this is the thing, like we concentrate on the tech industry because we have access and we have a little bit of sway within the tech industry, but inside of the tech industry is people, and people exist within the society outside of their businesses. And we can't just say that the problems that exist here aren't influenced by the people that we are and the people that we hang out with outside of the tech sector. So within hiring, if you look at the beginning of Silicon Valley, and we look at in the 1960s, where there was a drive to start individual companies inside of software engineering as a specialty, and it led to companies like Hewlett Packard, Xerox, and those companies started inside of top 30 university, people who originated in top 30 university. We're talking about MITs, Harvard, Stanford's. So in that era, the access to those companies, the people who had access to that, those types of investigations were educations were predominantly white individuals. So the companies that started in the tech industry started predominantly white. When you talk about raising up inside those companies, the people who stay there become the leadership. Leadership is predominantly white. And then the people they hire there, from that point on, hiring isn't a cold calling industry. No matter what people want you to believe, like, people aren't going around to every college that exists and find the best of the best. People are staffing from referrals, they're staffing from recommendations, and they're staffing from the communities around them. So if everyone around you is white and you're asking Jeff from accounting where you're going to find the next hire for a job role that just opened up, most people in the United States are in segregated communities, right? Due to redlining, due to the history of the United States at large, the community around you is going to be your color. So they're hiring from white communities. They're hiring from white friend circles. So this is something that leads to a kind of cycle of hiring that, whether intentionally or unintentionally, the people around you are predominantly white. Or in the Silicon Valley, now we have predominantly white and Asian. We have a lot of Southeastern Asian origins coming in. But if you want to break out of that, how do you break out of that? And the best, and I mean, if we want to talk about actually true numbers, true analytics, I think Twitter in 2019 had about 6% African-American representation inside their company. We're looking at referrals, 70% of referrals coming into the top 13 tech companies was 70% of hiring was done by referrals in the top 13 tech companies in the tech industry in 2020. We're talking about, I think, within Facebook, lower than 5% African-American representation. And over the last 2 years, even after the drive for diversity, it's a less than 1% uptick in representation in that type of representation. So even with the drive towards diversity and the drive towards getting people hired, there's still very much a need for the side of how do we do this, right? We're looking at, okay, we know there's a lot of driven people here. We heard the narrative. I mean, we want to do better, but how do we get these people in? So even with people in middle management and employees who want to get this work done, we can give them the tools, but the wider systemic impression around this work is still very negative, right? We're still seeing a problem with retention of Black employees, because you can't just plant a cactus. You can't just, I don't know, what doesn't survive in desert sand? You can't just, you know, plant a tropical plant in the desert, right? There needs to be the groundwork and the soil and the water around it to make it survive. So if you hire a Black employee into the Google Now, you're still dealing with the same company that lost Timnit Gebru, right? You're still dealing with the same company that lost any number of Black employees that lost because of intention, because their voices weren't heard. Their opinions at the meeting level are discounted for various reasons. I mean, they're still running into, you must be a diversity hire. They're still running into, I can't believe you didn't graduate college from a sports scholarship. I mean, just the various methods of bias that change the way people look at you. The need to allow people to survive in this space is a huge thing, which means internal cultures need to change before the hiring changes. But the internal culture is not going to change until the representation inside the company changes. You see the like catch 22 here,
yep.
Where until there's more people like that exposed to Black people, you know, Latinos, you know, people of different backgrounds, you're not going to get the voices inside the company to make those changes unless it comes from a board level, unless it comes top down, unless we're talking about key metrics, like core metrics the company care about. We're talking about profit. We're talking about growth. How do we make the DEI metrics the same level as those, right? How do we make people's promotions and bonuses count on, you know, what's your hiring look like? You know, what do your diversity numbers look like? Does your hiring pool look like the company that we want to represent in 20 years? For our roadmap to diversity in the next 20 years, what does your progress look like? And are we paying you for that? And only when companies see it as important as some of these other metrics will you see people starting to count it as important, you know? So, yeah, I mean, by the numbers, we're looking at very little improvement. We see some improvement as far as a conversation is concerned. In our personal community, we see more people wanting to help, but still very much seeing a need for the deployment aspect. How do we get that work out? Also, companies themselves and investing in communities, investing in that work that needs to be done. There was $50 billion promised for this work after in the giant Black Lives Matter movement energy push in the last couple of years to just after the death of George Floyd into the end of 2020, there's $50 billion dedicated to this work. And we've only seen $250 million paid. And there's a number of reasons for that. One of them is who's doing this work? Who do you give the money to? Once you give the money to these people, how do you know it's going where it's supposed to? That's one. I mean, that's understandable. But also, some companies just haven't paid the money because they've realized that putting out a press release gets you the goodwill, and how the work gets done is something that no one is really holding them to task for. So the holding them to task is the part that very much needs to be worked on. And that can take different forms, right? We're talking about an internal drive by internal employees. I mean, you can make a lot of noise inside your company. We're also talking about report cards for different companies that come out on a yearly basis. You know, when you look at the consumer reports, when you look at the awards that different car companies put in their car commercials and say, hey, look, we got the JD Power and Associates Award from the last, you know, 12 years. Side note, do you know where JD Power and Associates came from?
No.
They were an independent organization that started by cold calling the customers of car companies and saying, how did you like your experience with this car? They initially went to the car companies and the car companies said, who are you? Like, what are you doing? Well, you're nobody. And so they said, okay. So they put feet to pavement and they cold called hundreds of thousands of customers and put out a report. That report was something that over years became something that customers turned to as far as buying their cars. It ended up being a sales driver for companies. And you know what? The companies got on board. And so, you know, tech is huge. The little guy story is something that I very much believe in. So that story is a roadmap for me, right? So going to a company the size of Amazon and saying, work with us, you're nobody. You're especially a company that's a year and a half old. They're not going to let you in the door, but we're just going to JD Power and Associates it and just start working with the people that we know believe in this work and we can talk to. And hopefully in a few years, you know, we make enough noise that we can put out report cards and yearly reports to talk about the work that's being done and people will pay attention, because not only is it important, I mean, you can't just lie to us, bro. Like, it's just not, it's not something that should be allowed. And so there needs to be some sort of method to hold these companies accountable.
I love the J.D. Powers and Associates approach on this. This is awesome, man. You brought up some important points earlier. I want to go back to number one. I mean, absolutely, there's a lack of diversity in employment, right, in the tech field. But you also talked about kind of the investment world and the VC world, and you talked a little bit about the kind of the history of venture capital in Silicon Valley. And historically, it's been dominated by the white community, right? And there definitely needs to be, improvement in that space. I've seen it firsthand. About 7 years ago, I worked in the Texas Emerging Technology Fund. And the state of Texas gave investments to startup companies that were bringing some really good innovation to the state. And, I got to see the applicant companies coming to this fund, and there was very little diversity, if any, right? And I think that's a big problem. And I feel like there have been some baby steps in that regard that are helping to try to invest in minority companies. One example, the Beam network here in Austin. Yep. That focuses on female entrepreneurs. And I know there's similar funds, angel networks and VC funds that are doing similar for other different minority groups. But there definitely needs to be a big improvement in that space. And, what are you seeing kind of as part of this organization in that regard?
So in that regard, it's a matter of access as well, right? When people are thinking about who to fund, who's out on the trips, who's at the barbecues, hey man, we're really trying to invest in the health sector. Do you know anyone who's got any good ideas around this? You know what, man? I was just talking to my friend who, that's where these ideas are coming from. And if you don't know anyone in that space, first of all, it's once again representation. Second of all, a lot of ideas that may be culture specific aren't seen as at the same value as some of the other ideas that people may be used to. In the financial sector, you may come up with something to do with, hey, look, we have a way of using AI and machine learning to better represent trends in the stock market, right? Great. What's your product look like? That's something we believe in. But if we have a way of using AI to analyze hair textures in women of color to better provide a moisturizing shampoo for their particular needs, that's groundbreaking. Honestly, I should write that down. I came up with that off the top of my head, but it's literally something that could be taken to a VC and it wouldn't be held in the same value, even though hair care and beauty is a $1 billion industry, right? But because of the focus and because of the communities that it may help or represent, it's not something that people can relate to. And what a lot of people don't realize is that the things that we think are acceptable, the things that we think are good ideas, the things that we relate to, and hey man, I want to have a beer with that guy, or hey, he just seems cool, but I don't know why. This is all driven by our background. This is all driven by our own internal biases. This is driven by who we grew up around, who we talk to on a regular basis. If we see the same type of people on a regular basis, that represents as normal, right? And that normal is the benchmark that we hold everything else to. And so if you get into the VC funding room and an idea comes up, it's not necessarily that it's a Black person, I'm not going to give them money. It's something goes, I don't know. This just doesn't feel right. And that is something that we not only have to approach, identify, and realize, but we also have to drive funding, you know, ideas like the 15% pledge from companies where they're going to give 15% of their profit to minority organizations or Black-owned businesses, where we have to drive funding purposefully towards these underrepresented, companies and ideas until we can preface or address the wider issue, right? Which is, race in America is something that's been around since the birth of this country, right? It's not something that's going to go away anytime soon. So when people say, you know, we're post-racial, we're post thinking about these things, race affects everything from what products we buy to what schools we go to. It's everywhere. And for people to not realize and understand that every single person in this country, and especially the dominant culture, white America, in this culture needs to make certain sacrifices and certain allowances to balance the scales, because there's an idea of equality in the wider culture in America that says everyone's got the opportunity to get a job, everyone's got the opportunity to be successful, we're equal. I mean, this is a marathon with some people, you know, starting a mile back, right? Where, you know, the people weren't allowed, like they're in shackles literally at the starting line, and then people got to run, and then, you know, they're on mile 16 and they're like, okay, take the shackles off. Well, can we get a little bit of money to buy some running shoes and a uniform and get a number and register for the race? Like, no, you're on your own, right? And they just said, start running. And so not understanding that those people are going to be a disadvantage in this marathon we call America, we got to make certain allowances. So VC funding historically has gone to white companies, white ideas, and it's just a matter of realizing this and purposefully seeking out deserving. We're not saying just fund anything. We're not saying, like, you know, just throw money at Black people. Find deserving companies. There's tons of them out there. I've seen kids who have great ideas and have no idea how to get them funded, have no idea where to go. Start incubators for people of colors. Find colleges where people just don't have the capital to put up to get business loans, right? They still need collateral. Collateral means you got to have a house or some sort of money behind you, some kind of backing behind you. If your family doesn't have generational wealth, where does the collateral come from? Give kids collateral, right? Fund their ideas and take a piece of the idea. Still keep the VC model, but find these kids, give them some money, help them, give them a leg up, understand that they may be a little bit behind.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. How do you typically, how do you get the word out about Tech Can Do Better? And then how do you connect with companies to try to change things internally?
So one, we literally just have been contacting people online. Like, you can, because of the way that social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, a lot of people are public. So you can reach out to any individual in a company and say, hey, inside your company, hey, great. I see some of the work you've been doing. That's fantastic. Inside your company, who is responsible for DEI work? Who would the leadership in the ERG inside your company be? And we can have a conversation with those groups. People invested, involved in those groups also have opinions of their own. Once we get involved in the kind of, you know, the work that's going on inside the companies, we can talk about the work that we're doing. And if they don't have a roadmap on maybe how to get it done inside their own department, we can give them some of that material. We can show them how to affect some of these, you know, disparate issues that we're talking about. That's one of the ways. And then also we'll go from the top down and just look up their maybe executive DEI representative directly, right? But there's going to be a different story coming from them. So it's kind of like a burning the candle at both ends example. How do you contact us? I mean, you can go to techanddobetter.us. We just launched our new website. You can look for me, Moses Harris, on LinkedIn. Look for Tech and Do Better on Google. You'll find our information. You'll find everything about us. We're also on all of the social, you know, networks, LinkedIn, Twitter. Look up Tech Can Do Better. I mean, we're the only ones that come up, and you can find us very easily. If you go to our website, you can like hear about our mission statement. You can see our the document that we put out last year where we talked about, you know, what you can do where you are at all levels, some of the research around this stuff and some of the work we're doing in a fun little white paper that gives you a really good example of how we think this work can be done and how we do what we do. We recently actually became an official nonprofit, a 501c3 company. And so we're going to have a big push coming out in the next couple weeks or so. And so there'll just be, you know, more noise about us being made on the usual social channels.
How about for entrepreneurs that are listening and business leaders that are listening to this conversation right now, how can they get involved to help out with your mission?
So if you go to techanddobetter.us, there's going to be a section for contact us for, for different levels, right? So if you're a corporation versus individual, the contact form on our site is pretty comprehensive. It'll allow you to tell us what, you know, who you are, what your interest is, what you want to do. And we usually get back to you within an hour or so. We're very active. We're very responsive. And also our community organizers will reach out to you and say, hey, this is how you can help. And this is what you might be able to do or how we might be able to interface to further this mission.
That's great. Moses, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story and sharing the story of Tech Can Do Better. I definitely support you. Our podcast supports your efforts. I have one final question for you before I let you go. And that is, what is your favorite restaurant in Austin, Texas?
So you asked me this at the very beginning, and it's been kind of marinating in the background. My wife and I, so there's a bar on the Near East Side called Whistler, and there's a food truck that used to be there. It's not there anymore, but there's a new location post-COVID, the Tycoon Food Truck. I believe Korean inspired street food, and they have a really, my wife's vegan, so they have a very good vegetarian and vegan selection where you don't feel like you're getting, trash because you don't eat meat. So we go there all the time. It's really good. I don't have a huge, you know, like barbecue, low-key restaurant. I know a lot of the restaurants here get into that, but there's honestly, this is one of the best cities for that kind of food. So yeah, we're just happy to go there a lot.
That sounds delicious. I just wrote it down because I want to check it out.
It's I believe THAIKUN dash KUN.
Got it. Moses, thanks again for coming on the podcast. Listeners, I encourage you to check Tech Can Do Better out on their website, online, on Twitter, on Instagram. I will put that information on the show notes so you can see it. And Moses, hope to have you on again sometime.
All right. Thank you so much. Be more than happy to return, and hopefully I can come back with friends.
Thank you, sir.
This episode is brought to you by our affiliate, Gemini. Gemini is a well-respected cryptocurrency exchange started by Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss. If you're interested in purchasing Bitcoin, Ethereum, or other altcoins, please check out their website at gemini.sjv.io / moontower to learn all about it. Thank you.